From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Environmental groups are sounding the alarm over bills that could lead to the privatization of the state's water supplies.
The day this gets signed into law, the reclaimed water is controlled by those private utilities. It becomes a private resource.
The Florida Senate moves ahead with plans to privatize state prisons despite opposition.
You're opening the door for a future mistake to happen. Another mistake where we lose taxpayer dollars. We don't meet the savings. Let's not get rid of the good laws and the speed limits we put in place.
When it comes to raising tuition to support science and technology degrees, not every university shares the same view. And Attorney General Pam Bondi shines light on the issue of human trafficking, calling it modern-day slavery in the Sunshine State. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Yesterday, a Florida House subcommittee passed a bill that would shift control of reclaimed water away from water management districts and into the hands of utility companies. As Janelle Irwin from member station WMNF in Tampa reports, even though the 12-2 vote shows support from representatives, not everyone thinks it's a good idea.
Executive Director of the Audubon of Florida, Eric Draper, said language in the House Bill 639 would privatize the state's supply of reclaimed water. If the bill becomes law,
you could have people going without running water in Lakeland, and the city of Tampa could have so much water they would be throwing the extra water into Tampa Bay. But there would be no way to legally ask the city of Tampa to share some of their reclaimed water.
Representative Steve Perman, a Democrat out of Boca Raton, asked the bill's sponsor, Republican Dana Young, to remove language that declares reclaimed water as not being waters of the state until it has been discharged in a waterway.
And the concern is that, in fact, water that belongs to the citizens of Florida will become a commodity. And my question to you is, since I don't think it would substantially alter a lot of the other really good things in this bill, has there been any discussion as it moves forward of you perhaps modifying it so that the bill doesn't change the definition and it would certainly calm most of the concerns that anyone I've spoken to has with this bill at all?
Young's answer was a long-winded no. She said reclaimed water wasn't valuable when the statute defining what kind of water the state owns was written.
During that time, there was never the idea that reclaimed water would be anything but something to be disposed of. It was not intended to be part of the waters of the state. It was not intended to be part of the laundry list that's listed in the definition. And I believe that it's important to clarify the statute today so that as we go forward in making good water policy for the state, the statute is clear.
Representative Perman heads up the Everglades caucus designed to bring in funding for restoration efforts. He voted favorably for the bill, even though Young refused his suggestion. That may come as a surprise to former U.S. Senator Bob Graham, who is a fellow Everglades supporter. Only hours before the Agriculture and Natural Resources Subcommittee session, Graham, a Democrat, urged lawmakers to kill the reclaimed water bill.
There was considerable damage done a year ago to the state and its citizens and its one of its most precious assets, which is our fresh water. My hope is that this legislative session would be considered and would avoid any further damage and would begin the process of rolling back some of the improvident changes made last year.
Supporters say the bill is an answer to Florida's underuse of its reclaimed water. Assistant City Attorney for Tampa, Jan McLean, is one of them. She rejects the idea that the measure would do anything but help sustain the state's water supply. McLean denies claims that the bill would lead to privatized reclaimed water. She said water management districts would still have control over how much potable water a local utility could get based on their access to reclaimed water.
If I'm a public water supply utility like the City of Tampa, I go into the water management district and say, I need X amount of million gallons of water to be withdrawn to provide for potable use and other uses for my service area. So the district reviews the use of that water all the way through the stream, and it has to determine based on a three-part test, which is in the statute, whether that's going to be reasonable beneficial, whether the use will interfere with existing legal uses, and whether it's in the public interest.
The widespread idea is that reclaimed water would be used for irrigation and industrial purposes, leaving more potable water untouched. But there are other options. An article in the Tampa Bay Times said Tampa's mayor, Bob Buckhorn, would consider putting highly treated reclaimed water back into the drinking supply. He admitted the so-called toilet-to-tap process has an ick factor. Tampa City Council member Charlie Miranda said even though it sounds gross, it's not. And it's done a lot more than people think.
If you've been to Texas, if you've been to Atlanta, if you've been to the Washington, D.C. area, you have drank that water. If you've been to Israel, if you've been to South Africa, if you've been to Australia, if you've been to New Zealand, if you've been to Singapore, you have drank that water. That water manufactured is cleaner and better than the water that I'm producing right today in the city of Tampa, because it goes through many more processes.
The reclaimed water bill now heads to the Rulemaking and Regulation Subcommittee. Environmentalists are also hoping to stop House Bill 1103, which deals with the definition of state-owned submerged lands and wetlands. Both bills will be up in committees next week. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Janelle Irwin in Tampa.
While speaking at the Everglades Water Supply Summit in Tallahassee Tuesday, Governor Rick Scott said he'd like to learn a little more about the water privatization issue.
Yeah, I think it's something right now that we need to put more study into it. So I think it right now it requires a lot more study.
A massive effort to privatize about 30 South Florida correctional facilities is making its way through the Florida legislature again. As Sasha Corden reports, a Senate panel agreed today to move a pair of bills forward that would privatize the prisons and change the way the privatization plan needs to be vetted.
Last year, the controversial issue of prison privatization caused quite a ruckus in the Florida legislature, especially the Senate. It even prompted a lawsuit from a correctional officers union where a judge ruled in its favor that it was unconstitutional the way the legislature put a provision into the budget to privatize South Florida prisons without making sure it went through the proper committee process in the form of a bill. Senate President Mike Haradopoulos disagreed and asked Attorney General Pam Bondi to file an appeal, saying the way the legislature put it in the budget was constitutional. However, that didn't stop the Senate Rules Committee from filing a pair of privatization bills last week, Senate Bill 7170 and 7172.
Senate Proposed Bill 7170 revises three statutes in the court decision that impede the ability of the legislature to direct privatization of agency functions. Proposed Senate Bill 7172 then directs the Department of Corrections to issue one or more requests for proposals to privatize the management and operation of all correctional facilities in 18 counties in the Department of Corrections Southern Florida region, which is Region 4.
But even though the lawmakers on the panel were not voting on the official bills on Wednesday and were just agreeing to move them forward to go to their respective committees, Senator Gwen Margolis could not help but voice her concern at the bill that would allow any agency to not have to report on its privatization of a program or service until after the contract is signed.
It seems to not only deal with corrections, but every agency in the state of Florida. And the waiver is a waiver that actually says that we can put in the budget any contract for any agency. The language is pretty broad, sir, and that's a little disturbing.
Senator Evelyn Lynn also had a few issues with the bill, particularly that departments would not have to show the cost effectiveness, an issue that was of concern last session.
What's been brought up is something that appears to be in 7170, the fact that if privatizing is required by law, that privatization would be exempt from the requirement for evaluation of cost effectiveness in particular.
But Senate Budget Chief J.D. Alexander says that is not the case.
Just a clarification.
Yes, sir.
It exempts the business case model when we have effectively made the decision to privatize through a budget decision.
Correct.
But it does not relieve the requirement of the minimum 7% cost savings that privatizations are required to get.
Several people testified in opposition to Senate Bill 7170, including Matt Puckett. He's with the Florida Police Benevolent Association, the group that filed a lawsuit to block the prison privatization plan on behalf of correctional officers, so the legislature can make a decision about privatizing without having the proper business analysis on how privatization could impact the state.
I don't know why we are undoing these changes now. I think these are put in place so that we don't make mistakes when we privatize. We should never make a mistake when we're privatizing. We're dealing with lives when we're talking about corrections, and we're dealing with taxpayer dollars. If you move forward with 7170, you're opening the door for a future mistake to happen, another mistake where we lose taxpayer dollars. We don't meet the savings. Let's not get rid of the good laws and the speed bumps we put in place to protect the taxpayers and the citizens of Florida from privatization.
Rashe Cherry is a correctional officer at Charlotte Correctional Institution for about 6 years. She says she's concerned about how she could be among the about 4,000 officers who could lose their jobs due to the privatization effort.
Myself and my husband have very proudly and wholeheartedly built our family on the backs of the department. We're expecting our second daughter here shortly, and instead of being able to look forward to things like putting away for a college education and looking forward to the new things that challenge our family, we spent a lot of our nights worrying about how we might deal with this privatization.
In the end, the Senate Rules Committee voted to introduce both bills with objections from Democrat Senator Margolis and Senator Chris Smith. The committee's chairman, Senator Thrasher, did vow that the bills will now be assigned to the proper committees for consideration. And Senate Budget Chief J.D. Alexander, who pushed for the privatization effort last session, says as the process moves forward, he looks forward to the discussion, but still maintains that Florida could save about $40 million this year, which he says could be used for other areas in the budget. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a new proposal would send the Attorney General to defend teachers facing civil suits, but not all educators say that's something they want.
There's less money than ever, and the governor's telling us that he wants less government in our lives than ever. I just don't understand why you're trying to do this.
When it comes to raising tuition to support science and technology degrees, not every university shares the same view.
I don't want to see students that have less of an income not be able to enter a field that they're talented in.
And we hear how the state is shining a spotlight on human trafficking.
It's something like I always compare it to child molestation cases. People don't when I was a prosecutor, like the yucky child molestation cases never made the news because they were so ugly.
Lawmakers are considering a bill that would require the state attorney general's office to defend teachers in certain legal cases. But Regan McCarthy reports not all teachers are behind the move.
A bill that claims to be aimed at protecting teachers made its first committee stop today. The bill, sponsored by Representative Jeffrey Brandis, a Republican from St. Petersburg, would require the attorney general to defend a teacher in certain legal cases.
The bill requires the officer of the attorney general to defend the teacher throughout the civil action if the office of the attorney general determines that the teacher acted in good faith and what they believed was in good faith within the scope of the teacher's duties in enforcing discipline policies.
Teachers would still have the option of selecting a different attorney if they'd like, but Brandis says the idea behind the bill is to protect the state's teachers from frivolous lawsuits.
When we offer up our attorney general and the services which the attorney general's office provide, we're actually offering up the highest quality that the state stands for. And I think that's something that's noble and should be valued by our teachers.
Republican Representative Bill Hager of Boca Raton says this is a bill he thinks is very important.
I'm a former middle school classroom teacher where on a daily basis, momentary basis, one is engaged nonstop in discipline to retain control of the classroom.
But some worry about the cost. Brandis says 22 cases have arisen in the last year. The Attorney General's office has suggested that if it had been responsible for defending those cases, it might have cost as much as $2.1 million, or about $96,000 per case. Brandis says only about 5% of the cases go to trial and are settled for a much lower cost. Nonetheless, Representative Martin Kerr, a Democrat from Davie, says he's not sure it's a good use of the state's money.
Currently, under Florida law,
if a teacher is sued civilly, then they will be either represented by their union attorney, which is provided to them, or the school board. There's already representation there.
And Kerr says he suspects there could be cases the attorney general wouldn't be able to defend because of a conflict of interest, meaning the state could have to hire expensive private lawyers. Bea Grassel is the president of the Lake County Education Association. She says the teachers she represents don't understand why this bill is needed.
We hear from Tallahassee that there's less money than ever, and the governor's telling us that he wants less government in our lives than ever. I just don't understand why you're trying to do this.
Grassel says if the government has extra money to spend, she's got some suggestions for where it can be used, like back in individual school districts. The bill also would give professional teacher associations that don't participate in collective bargaining license to represent teachers in some situations without following all the rules teachers' unions are required to follow. It's a move Representative Kerr says he thinks is a union-busting technique.
Currently, when you collectively bargain, every teacher is going to benefit from the contract that is agreed to with the school board, whether you belong to the union or whether you don't. And what's going to happen in this, if this is allowed, there will be teachers who will decide not to join the union, and they're going to join groups like Penn and others, not knowing that by taking away their union dues from the union and taking away that will dilute their power in the collective bargaining process.
The bill passed out of the committee with an 8-6 vote. It now moves to the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee. A similar bill in the Senate has not yet been heard. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. Lawmakers are continuing their review of higher education and talking with more of the state university presidents. The talks are happening in the House Higher Education Committee, where, as Lynn Hatter reports, differences between the schools are starting to emerge, especially when it comes to issues like tuition increases for STEM degrees.
Not every university is created equal. State University System Chancellor Frank Brogan made that statement when he addressed the House's Higher Education Committee last week, and that same view held true Tuesday, as lawmakers heard from presidents at the universities of Central and South Florida in the first of two meetings scheduled during the day. Both schools played up their emphasis on STEM education by highlighting programs like medicine, nursing, and engineering. However, they also contradicted earlier testimony on tuition rates, breaking ranks from Florida State and the University of Florida, which supported market-rate tuition for STEM programs. University of Central Florida President John Hitt says he's not sure about establishing higher tuition price for STEM degrees. He worries about pricing out some students with the talent, but not the funding, from being able to enter those programs.
I'd hate to think that some bright young woman or man came in and, out of concern over what the family could afford, picked a discipline that was cheaper but not right for them or for society.
The difference in position was noted by House Education Committee Chairman Representative Bill Proctor.
Which gets you back to STEM and pricing it at a market rate, which some people say wouldn't affect enrollment at all, and others say it would affect enrollment.
University of South Florida President Judy Genshaft holds a similar view on the market rate tuition idea. She says the issue of program costs is tricky and sensitive and is different for each school depending on the students it serves.
As long as we can care for the students that are Pell recipients, I don't want to see students that have less of an income not be able to enter a field that they're talented in.
Genshaft says she can see a tuition increase, but not so much that financial aid won't cover it. Governor Rick Scott and other legislative leaders want the state's higher education institutions to produce more graduates in STEM programs. They say that's where the jobs are. But Representative Proctor, whose committee is in charge of drafting either recommendations or legislation, questioned whether the increased STEM production is actually needed.
In your opinion, are the appropriate job openings there, or do we actually have a shortage of graduates, or are we operating on the basis if we produce them, industry and business will come? What position are we in?
That question went to UCF President John Hitt, who said the state has to be targeted in its approach to STEM.
To what extent do we adopt a supply-side approach on this? You know, I would say that works, but within limits. These are expensive degrees to produce, And you don't want to just be producing them so they can go to North Carolina or Georgia or California and work for employers there.
Right now, the state is graduating doctors but doesn't have enough hospital training places to put them in. As a result, many Florida-trained physicians leave to practice elsewhere and take their jobs with them. The committee continued its conversation on higher education reform and STEM degrees in a second session with university representatives from Florida A&M, Florida International, and Florida Atlantic universities in an ongoing conversation about potential changes to the state's college and university system. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
Thursday is Florida Retail Federation Retail Days at the Capitol. The Florida Retail Federation is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. The Senate Commerce and Tourism Committee will consider a bill by Orlando Senator Gary Siplin that will prohibit the use of a job applicant's credit history as hiring criteria. The committee will also take up a bill by Senator Jack Latvala that would require all state contracts that have call centers to be staffed by persons in the United States. The Senate Transportation Committee will hear Senator Bill Montford's bill to allow school districts to advertise on school buses. The House Appropriations Committee will hold a workshop on prison privatization. And the Power of Positive Thinking, the House Economic Affairs Committee, will be asked to rename unemployment compensation to make it re-employment assistance. That's the daybook for Thursday, January 19th.
Finally, Attorney General Pam Bondi says human trafficking is a problem in Florida. Bondi sponsored a resolution today having the governor and cabinet recognize January as Human Trafficking Awareness Month. James Call reports Bondi is also behind a proposal in the legislature to empower a statewide prosecutor to rescue the victims of what she calls modern-day slavery.
Human trafficking is the term law enforcement uses to describe the act of coercing a person into forced labor, including prostitution, domestic servitude, restaurant work, and migrant agricultural work. According to a report commissioned by the Florida legislature, it's the fastest-growing criminal enterprise in the world, a $32 billion industry. And according to Attorney General Pam Bondi, it thrives in the shadows. Few people acknowledge it exists, and fewer still talk about it.
It's something like I always compare it to child molestation cases. People don't when I was a prosecutor, like the yucky child molestation cases never made the news because they were so ugly. And I feel like that's what this is. It's bringing awareness to the issue.
Bondi asked the chairs of both the Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Judiciary Committee to come up with legislation to crack down on human trafficking. A study by the Florida State University Center for the Advancement of Human Rights found that Florida is a popular American destination for human traffickers due to a large agricultural industry and also because of a tourism-based economy. Labor is the most prevalent type of human trafficking in Florida, but the report found that minor sex trafficking is a significant problem.
Because a lot of these young women are runaways, and a lot of them are migrant workers, but a lot of them are runaways within our own country, who young runaways who are in foster care, who come to Florida, who get taken into this sex trade and don't know how to get out.
Stewart Representative William Snyder is sponsoring a bill rewriting the state's human trafficking law. He says currently there are three laws on the books that he says law enforcement basically ignores. A staff analysis of his bill found of the three laws, the legislature can document just three arrests and one conviction.
And they were different enough and confusing enough that I think that was one of the reasons law enforcement was not making arrests, because we discovered that law enforcement was not making arrests under state law. They were turning everything over to the federal government. So the main thrust of our bill is to provide a framework in one statute that empowers state and local law enforcement to make their own cases.
An estimated 15,000 to 18,000 people are bought and sold in the United States every year to work as prostitutes, domestic workers, and child laborers. Numbers are difficult to quantify, but in 2010, the State Department of Children and Families received reports of 156 trafficking incidents in Florida. The United States government considers Florida as a top three state in human trafficking. Salvin's bill, and a companion in the Senate, rewrite the law to clear up confusion about intent, empowers a statewide prosecutor to attack the problem, and permits wiretapping of suspects.
So local law enforcement just didn't have the manpower and the resources to work these cases. Well, now with the statewide prosecutor being able to do it, they'll be able to do these in a statewide manner, because unless it's in statute that the statewide prosecutor can investigate, they can't touch it. Unless it's in statute that it can be a wiretap, you can't use a wiretap. And what we also did was we elevated everything, because I personally felt that if you force somebody into a bonded situation to do stoop labor, although it's not as egregious as a brothel kind of feel, it's still pretty egregious.
The bill also removes the requirement that a victim has to be transported to constitute a human trafficking case and increases the penalty for human smuggling from a misdemeanor to a third-degree felony. Both the House and Senate bills passed out of their first committees and have two more committee stops each before going to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.